Robert Half research indicates 9 out of 10 hiring managers are having difficulty hiring. If you have open roles, chances are you're feeling this too. That's why you need Robert Half. Our specialized recruiting professionals engage with our proprietary AI to connect businesses of all sizes with highly skilled talent in finance and accounting, technology, marketing and creative, legal, and administrative and customer support. At Robert Half, we know talent. Visit roberthalf.com today.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Cheese Conrad alongside Charlie Chuckwagon Davis and Hollywood Heath Pierce. And we have an emergency podcast on our hands because JT Batson, the new CEO of U.S. Soccer, and the U.S. Soccer president, Cindy Parlow-Cohn, have said it's an emergency press conference. We got some big news, and some big news they dropped, boys. Ernie Stewart has left his position at U.S. Soccer as sporting director and headed over across the pond to PSV Eindhoven. And that's pretty good for him. But what does that mean for U.S. Soccer? We can get into his part of it in a second. Heath, I'm coming to you. Ernie Stewart's out. Brian McBride's out. Heads are starting to roll. It doesn't look good for Greg Berhalter to stick around if his buddies are leaving. You know what I'm saying?
I'm not even positive that they're all buddies, to be honest with you.
Well, not anymore. They probably were at some point.
I would find it difficult if the three of us all sat in a hierarchical system. The three of us, I consider us friends. Maybe Charlie doesn't consider me a friend. But, I've never been on his boat or his plane. But like, that's just because we're on opposite sides of the country. But like, outside of that, like, I would find it probably difficult to keep this relationship and bond that we have if we were in this hierarchical system that reported in other people in a more corporate environment. Right? Eventually, you start to get pulled in different directions. And we know U.S. soccer generally has been notorious for just having people pulled in all directions all the time. It's chaos. And now I was thinking about it. I was like, wow, this could be really great for a new coach to come in because maybe he gets to bring in a sporting director, maybe whatever. But then I'm like, man, are we all the way back like 6, 7, 8 years ago where we're now we need to fill all these places and fit in line with where we're going? Because Ernie Stewart was a step forward. Brian McBride was in his role. And I don't know if Brian McBride loved that role and what was required of that role. But I'm very shocked that this is happening. I'm not surprised because this seems like it's going to happen. But now it feels like we've got a long way to go in our biggest stretch ever, or our most important stretch ever in the history of soccer in North America.
I'm trying to envision a world where Charlie's my boss and how I would cope with that. I just don't know, Heath. If I can,
you can't fire me. I quit.
I quit. I'm not taking any more of your crap, Charlie. Okay. All right. So Charlie, do you feel like because there was a press conference, a press release got put out by U.S. Soccer at the same time where the Brian McBride decision they're claiming now is predetermined. They had already made the decision prior to the World Cup, so it didn't matter what happened there. The Gio Reyna, Greg stuff, not part of it at all. I don't know. It doesn't feel like that's the case, but okay. And then with regard to Ernie, do you think he just is like, this is just a shit show, and I can go home and go to a club that a big club in PSV. Why wouldn't I go do that? Why couldn't I get more into the day to day in a different way where I don't have to deal with all of the drama that's starting to surround U.S. soccer on the men's side, at least?
Yeah, I mean, one, I think Brian McBride, he's an honest guy. If that was the plan the whole time, great. But it definitely doesn't help that there's this big cloud around Claudio Reyna and Gio Reyna and Berhalter. And then all of a sudden, his boss, Ernie Stewart, is saying, I'm out. I'm going to PSV. And he was the sporting director for AZ Alkmaar. So he's done it before. In terms of clubs that would bring you back, I think PSV is one of those clubs. I mean, it's only two, really, PSV and Ajax. And I think Ajax would be really difficult to get that job just because of all the people that have come through Ajax that are now, you know, whether it's Van der Sar or Bergkamp. It just feels like for him to get that opportunity, if he wants to maximize his potential in that role, then it's something you got to take. I'm sure this didn't help. I think it made the decision much easier for him, but it's one of those opportunities that come along to go back to a country that you feel home, you feel happy in, you feel like it's home.
His family's there.
Right.
It's kind of a no-brainer, I think, for him.
Go ahead, Jimmy.
No, go ahead.
I was going to say that the other thing with that is that I think the timing of it is tough, but I was thinking about the role of the technical director, sporting director, general manager of a national team when you've come from a club environment, right? And we know that he started, you know, before Asset, he was at NAC Breda, and he's kind of been in that daily environment, right? Your daily interaction with players and staff, and that's different, right? Of course, he's working across the gambit of like youth and everything like that, but it's a completely different type of role. And for his own personal ambition, you can't knock that. It'd be one thing if he just left and we were like, uh-oh, how is this tied to the Berhalter situation or McBride situation? Or how is this like what's going to come out? And I think there's going to be a little bit of a lingering effect that we find out later down the line in terms of how it all played out. I believe that to be true, or that Ernie will be part of whatever process ends up happening, legal or otherwise. But
the stress of the buildup to what ultimately happened at the World Cup.
I mean, it's just when I think about this, right? And you think about the fact that U.S. soccer has people that have been there for 25 years. Like, the time to leave U.S. soccer would have been all the times before, even now. But this idea that, man, we got 2026 on the horizon, right? I'm going to stick this thing out. This is a life-changing thing for me, for soccer, for all these things, that you have to have something either so good that you have to leave, or something has to be so bad that you're wanting to leave, you know? And I think it might be a mix of the two.
Yeah.
Do I think U.S. soccer is going in the right direction or attempting to trying to do their best to go in the right direction? Yes, but clearly with this much change, it doesn't seem to be, you know, in a good place right now.
I can speak just from playing for Ernie as he was a sporting director at Philadelphia Union when I was there. He was at training every day, and I know he liked to be there because, one, he liked the interactions. He wanted to see the players, but he also had fun, you know, playing pickup games after, you know, the coaches all get together and they'd play there, you know, twice a week. They'd play their small-sided games. I think that's something that you crave. And once you've established, like, that's your way of life, and you ultimately change for U.S. soccer for a bigger job, but you still have that feeling, that itch to get back to that type of schedule. So, you know,
out of curiosity, what was Ernie Stewart's record as sporting director when like how much success did Philly have under his time?
Well, they got into the playoffs finally with Ernie Stewart there. And I think the recruitment, obviously he groomed Chris Albright, who then got his opportunity in Cincinnati and has done really well.
Ernst Tanner did not have to start from scratch, right? Ernst Tanner's going to do it his way, but he came in with some structure and some, like, we want to take it to.
And it seems like he's done that with U.S. soccer, right? At least on the men's side, it feels like we started to get that. And obviously working through the women's side, because he had touch points over there as well as part of his job requirements.
I will say,
working through all the lawsuits and all that must have been very stressful. And thankfully they got to what seems like a satisfying resolution for both sides.
I know one thing he did for sure with the Philadelphia Union is he brought a sense of professionalism. So he raised the level of the club. They traded for me in August. And typically, you know, in an MLS trade.
I wasn't fond of for the Union. I didn't see the value, Jimmy. I didn't see the upside personally. But that's Ernie, we'll ask Ernie about that specifically on another.
We'll bring him on.
Yeah. But they traded for me, and he picked me up at the airport. You know, I think that's just something. It's a little thing.
He lives next to the airport. I think
that's a huge, like, that is a European style cultural thing where you're brought directly into the family that I think a lot of MLS teams or maybe teams around the world don't think about, right? The little nuance. When I went to Denmark, it was very different. Like, it was a little bit more like, oh, you're a grown man, like, you'll figure it out. Whereas,
same.
In other places, like Germany, where there's a higher level of professionalism, they knew that, like, man, all we want this guy to do is focus on playing. So we are going to make him as comfortable as possible. And I think that piece has been, and it's getting better, but I know we laugh about the example you just used, but that's a really big deal for anybody to feel welcomed and part of something and
by the boss, right?
I'm glad you're bringing up that story. I think it gives a side of Ernie that maybe people don't realize or don't appreciate. And if he's bringing that type of warmth and touch to U.S. soccer, then I think he's going to, or he has left it in a better place than when he first got it, right? And obviously we qualified for a World Cup on the men's side when after he took over and has been in a good spot.
He took over just after the Women's World Cup, by the way, which is not a great time lawsuit-wise. I think it's great for progress, and he was willing to take that head-on, which I think was up for challenges.
We got to get him on the podcast. Yeah. We want him to fill in some of these gaps and answer some questions for us. But now I guess the next set of questions are who's that we got a couple of vacancies. We got to fill it. We got Brian McBride's role. We got Ernie Stewart. We got potentially a head coaching vacancy. Now, Cindy Parlacone, the president, has come out and said that Greg is still a candidate. He's still right in the mix. You guys can take that for what it is. But now it's like, well, who's leading the search? And apparently it's U.S. Soccer has retained Sportsology Group to consult on the search. Now, who and what is Sportsology? They specialize in providing premium knowledge, insight, strategic advisory, and operational support to franchise owners, global leagues, and federations. Okay. So I took another step. I'm like, all right, who's behind Sportsology? And the guy that is really running executive chairman is Mike Ford. Now, Mike Ford, from what I understand, worked with Chelsea for some time, and he's very close with Carlo Ancelotti, which, hey, if Carlo wants to come over and manage the national team, get on it, Mike Ford. But so then I went to Mike Ford's website, because why wouldn't you? And it's meetmikeford.com, which is awesome. And if you want to meet Mike, he says Mike is a pioneer in elite sports, a leading speaker on performance development, and a trusted advisor to businesses and athletes across the globe. So at least from corporate speak, it sounds like we got the right guy going to fill in the gaps for us. No pressure, Mike Ford. Now, U.S. Soccer also stated that who is overseeing the sporting department without a sporting director, and apparently that's going to fall to the new CEO, JT Batson, who has promised me that he'll come on the show at some point. Mark Graff, the women's national team general manager. You got Tom King, Elaine Lamos, Rick Koss, Dan Russell, Dr. George Chiampas. I mean, just kind of everybody that is involved with U.S. soccer at a higher level is going to be trying to plug in where they can. They're stating that they're going to have everything kind of settled by the summer, or it seems like that's the destination, which means Anthony Hudson is at least going to continue in his role as interim coach, potentially through the March games, the Nations League games, where that's an open FIFA date. Who do you think should be in charge of this? Heath, I'll come to you first. Do you like that? You should obviously have some outside counsel and outside consultancy just to make sure that you're looking at everything in a 360 type of direction. But what do you think?
When I think about these roles, right, I think those are full-time roles. When I think about general manager, that is a full-time job. That is in it, deeply in it all the time. I think same thing with Ernie's job. That is a full-time role. That is not a luxury role. It's not something where you kind of check in and check out. And I think that's next person has to really, really want that. It is not an easy job. I don't even know where to begin in terms of coach, general manager, sporting director, or what was it? Sporting director or technical director? I don't even know where to begin in terms of filling that in, because a lot of it is in, if you go back to a lot of JT Batson's structure, he kept talking about new structure in some of his recent press conferences. And that means that process probably should fall in line with that structure, right? Of who reports to who? Who is somebody's boss? Whose job is it to identify a head coach, right? Is the general manager involved in that? Maybe, maybe not. Is the sporting director involved in that? Then you need to get those pieces in place, because if you don't, then you're already creating that tension that we know of inheriting a staff or a team or a hierarchy that might not make sense. And as we look towards the next few years, we really need those to align together. There can be healthy tension, and there should be healthy tension in those positions. But if you get that order backwards, then again, I think we're starting from a really bad spot.
Okay. Chuck, your thoughts.
There's a lot of positions that we need to look at. I think you have to start at the top because you need direction. You need guidance from the leader and where this program's going, where it's headed. And you need to have the ultimate leader to basically put everything in place. You can't hire a coach before you hire the sporting director and the technical director. So I'm just thinking of where you go from here because
Chuck, I'm going to pull you back here. Yeah. You threw your name indirectly into the hat in the last couple podcasts.
Yeah, for sure. Not indirectly. He was doing a layup.
What's your vision? Just say you're interviewing for the job right now, Chuck. If you were taking over sporting director or technical director of the men's national team, what is the plan? Like, what would you do to help kind of make sure that we keep this thing pointed in the right direction and are demonstrating progress, and that is reflected in how we perform in the 2026 World Cup?
Well, one, you have to have an identity. And the thing is, you don't really have to rebuild. I think what is there is a good foundation. What this team currently has, the player pool, everything is in place. You're not starting from scratch, which is great. You come in and you make sure, okay, who's the right man for this job? Who are we going to go after? You have your targets. Maybe there's a list of 10 coaches that you're trying to go after. And then
a technical director first then.
Yeah.
Yes. So we had to go technical director first, right? Because he's going to be the link. He's the connective tissue between your vision and actually the execution.
And then holding the coach accountable, right? And the other coaches who are the youth coaches who are falling in line, basically trying to make sure that the youth national teams are playing a certain way to eventually feed the top team. So
as
technical directors, I'm not sure how many options there are. Right. And then you go back to, do they have to be American? Do they have to have played on the national team or had some sort of national team experience versus, you know, your Tim Vazbachenkos of the world or, I'm sure Garth Lagerwey would have been a top candidate had he not taken Atlanta. He's probably thinking like, should I have taken this Atlanta job?
Yeah. I mean, that 2026 carrot is insane. Because I mean, if we do well on that, I mean, that it's just could be the peak of your career, right? To have be part of a successful 2026 World Cup.
But I thought that we would go sort out the women's lawsuit. Okay. Move past that. New collective bargaining agreement for the players. Move past that. Step three in talking to U.S. Soccer was rebuild U.S. Soccer's, not rebuild their image, but build their image again with fans and with consumers and with people, right? And I just feel like they did the first two. And now we're on three. And if you're, whether somebody looking at the job or you're a fan or you're a consumer or whatever, you're looking at it going like, so what's changed? We've now got three positions open and someone's got to step up and it's going to be so political and everything's going to be so quiet and silent out of U.S. Soccer in this situation. I don't know if we're going to get clarity as to why is there three jobs open right now.
No.
What is going right or wrong? Even if it's all circumstantial, at a certain point, you got to be able to stand up and explain why it's all circumstantial and why it's not all interconnected and why things are actually moving forward and why we're excited about the future. But going back from the World Cup, it's been dead silent coming out of U.S. soccer for the most part.
Yeah.
Right.
And I don't think you have to think it's just because of this whole Reyna Berhalter thing. Right. But also you're thinking, If I'm coaching or I'm a part of U.S. soccer and you have the World Cup in 2026, there should be maybe one job in the entire globe that maybe pushes you away from this monumental occurrence in our country, that this is basically going to take our sport and raise it to a whole nother level. So now we are literally competing with NBA, MLB and NFL, like on a legit scale. And you don't have to have a question about, hey, you guys forgot to, you know, mention this MLS team or this US, you know, the US men's or women's teams in commercials or this or that. You will always think about the sport. And so I'm thinking, how can you be moved off of this job knowing what's in front of you? So I guess my another question I have is, if you can get a Yugi Love now, or you can get, let's say, Jose Mourinho right now, would you pull the trigger or do you wait? And then that option is potentially gone. You know what I mean?
Right. I think there's an interesting underlying theme to what both of you are saying. with regard to us being reactionary, it feels like just soccer in general in this country, we're always reacting to whatever the moment is. And I always got frustrated using MLS as an example of, okay, I think everybody understands why the single entity structure was put into place. The previous leagues, professional soccer leagues that had tried it and started and failed, didn't work. And the single entity structure gave some security to that. My issue with that is that there didn't seem like there was a evolution to it, an exit strategy to, okay, it did what it's going to do. Let's take the handcuffs off and start to really let the owners and let there be some individual ownership and decision-making from the club level, just like we see everywhere else around the world. And that gets frustrating for me because it still feels like they're just being protective of an idea and maybe not evolving it the way that it maybe could and maybe should in the future. That's a whole different podcast. We can get into that another time and bring on special guests to touch upon different points. But with regard to this, when we think about 26, we're going to have so much momentum for the game in this country. And it feels like if we're still in reactionary mode, we're missing out on so many opportunities to grow the game, accelerate the growth of the game in this country. Are we putting someone in place? MLS, U.S. Soccer, NWSL, Women's National, whatever it is, because the Women's World Cup is in 27. It might be in the U.S. as well. They haven't determined that yet. But what are we doing to put a team in place, actually hiring people that know what the hell they're doing to make sure that we're capturing this momentum and using it to get to your point, Heath, to get back to the consumers, to make sure that they're feeling a part of it, that everything is clear, that we're all working and rowing the boat in the same direction. That's always been something that frustrates me too in this country, is that we have all these acronyms of different leagues and different levels and everybody's working against each other. And like, God, this feels really counterproductive. I don't know, Heath, I'll let you go first on what I'm saying. Cause now I don't really, it's like a dot, 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 my conversation. I don't have a hard period or an exclamation point.
No, I think that we can look at it through the lens of chaos, or we can look at it through the lens of opportunity. And that's going to be, I think, on U.S. soccer to shape that narrative for all of us to buy into and believe in, because I think we're at a point now where they need to earn, I'm speaking as fans and even as former players, our trust again, right? I think the World Cup was a successful one, but now we're caught in the midst of controversy. And it feels like coming out of the back of that controversy, even if it's all circumstantial, maybe Ernie Stewart didn't mention it to anybody and had been offered this opportunity and been sitting on it for a while, or maybe it's just recent and he's like, this is a life-changing thing. If anything, for Ernie, this is a fantastic win for him. Even in the best of times of U.S. soccer, if PSV came knocking, you'd still think about it. It's a big club. It's a huge club. And he's from there. You know, like, it's not like he's running away from his responsibilities. It's a legitimate thing that anybody would have to consider. However, so, go ahead.
No. There's a quote here from Cindy Parlocone and from Brian McBride in this press release they put out about how, this is Brian's words, who says, after careful consideration, this decision for me to leave was made prior to the 2022 World Cup, but we collectively felt that any potential disruption to the team's focus would have been a detriment at the time. I'm looking forward to the opportunities ahead. What I find interesting is if that was actually made prior to the World Cup, then once we get knocked out, we had like a month, 5 weeks, 6 weeks to make an announcement about Brian McBride moving on. And only after controversy do we make that decision. And then when that gets announced, now we're giving out a press release a week later to hear his thoughts. And I don't know, it's interesting to me. Charlie, want to chime in on anything we've been talking about? Go for it.
No, I'm all ears. I mean, there's just so many questions here where is U.S. soccer heading? What is the really number one priority for the U.S. men's team and then the U.S. women's team? And you know, if I'm looking at building a successful program and all this momentum, the right hire maybe is not an American necessarily. Maybe it's someone who's helped put together, you know, a successful run, you know, whether it be Liverpool, because the Fenway Sports Group was there and obviously turned Liverpool around and had basically the one on this run the past 6-7 years. So, you know, is it something like that? And would this offer be enough to entice someone who has a coveted role in Europe? You know, so I think that's another thing. What does that offer look like? Is it something to move anyone because we have people already leaving, you know? So it's one of those things where if you have that position, if it's so important, you would never leave it, right? You would never say, this isn't the right fit. I'm going to try and figure out a way to make this work because it's such a special position, as opposed to, man, you know, we have all these Americans leaving. Now, how are we going to bring up an even higher profile, trusted and tried European who will help us get over the hump and get to a semifinals in a World Cup?
All right. So I have a few questions before we let everybody go here on this emergency podcast.
Imagine sleeping in the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Bull & Branch's iconic sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Bull & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee plus 15% off your first order with code Odyssey. So head to B-O-L-L and Branch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Does Greg Berhalter stay, Heath? Given that Ernie Stewart's out and Brian McBride is out, it's okay. Maybe this is circumstantial. Maybe Brian's decision was made prior to the World Cup, and Ernie just had a opportunity that he couldn't turn down. Gets closer to family. PSV, obviously one of the bigger clubs, and Holland. What happens with Greg now? Because when we talked to Brian, when he came on the show, his communication, what he had built up, what he helped Greg build with the team, with the culture, to make sure everything was good, the relationships were good and strong with all the clubs that all the players play on. That now is going to change if Greg stays and his direct reports into what Charlie was saying before about being top down. Well, what if the new sporting director and technical don't like Greg or want to change? Like, what? It gets really gray right now and a little sticky. So I think Greg's gone anyway, but yeah, I think it helps here.
I think if both of them stayed, Greg would still be gone just because of the circumstances that have surrounded U.S. soccer post World Cup. I think that's made it really hard for, even if he was a 49-51 or 51-49 after the World Cup in terms of what I think was a successful rollout of a very young and experienced team moving forward. I think that second stint is always a very high risk one for the players, because you do demand a lot during that window to get the most out of them come World Cup. And then once all this happened, then I think it swings beyond the point of return. And there's just no way that, like you said, like we just talked about, well, okay, we're going to have a search up until summer and you're going to keep this interim coach on board. Well, you're obviously heading towards an open transfer window in terms of managers being out of contract and opportunities there to take them out of season or buy out their contracts or have them walk away. You're dealing with all kinds of things, right? But step one is figuring out all these other, like, you know, what is that technical role and how do you get that person in? And maybe that person turns around and says, I'm 100% backing Greg Berhalter because he's the right guy in the circumstance that we have to move forward. And that's the case, but that's why you hire that role. Yes, there's a coaching search, and yes, it needs to be approved by the board budget-wise, and yes, JT's going to have a say, and Cindy's going to have a say, and everyone's going to have a say, but the technical director, usually when they come in, at least in the club scenario, need to have some autonomy to make some decisions to be accountable for what they want.
Can I ask you a question, both of you guys?
Yeah, shoot.
What type of candidate would you go after? As a sporting director?
Sporting
director. I think we know for a coach, because you know you to get the most out of this group, I think you got to go to someone who's had a lot of success in Europe, and I think that's why, or internationally, and I think that's why we said, you know, Jose Mourinho, that would be an awesome. Yugi Love, who's obviously had an incredible span with Germany. But as far as a sporting director, who would be kind of somebody that you would go after?
Yeah, in terms of names, I guess I'd have to sit by the fire and smoke my pipe and figure out what I...
I lean towards somebody that plays that... One, you have to have an experience of knowing the continental United States, right? The cultural side of the game here, because if you're implementing a style or a system of play, you need to understand that it's not as simple as turning it on. How kids grow up playing in border states or in
New Hampshire
communities and different from Charlie on ice in New Hampshire is going to be completely different, right? The seasons are different. The way you develop are different. Like understanding the nuance of the system of player development, because you're not just talking about, oh, I'm just trying to implement a style of the first team. You're trying to build an infrastructure for the future, right? Or build on the infrastructure that's already been built, which I hope is the case. So it makes it really hard to think about candidates, because when I think European, I'm like, okay, well, then there's an educational phase and transitional phase. When I think about U.S. candidates, I'm like, who's the right candidate? And then how does that align to a head coach, right? So if you went and got a U.S. Sporting director, then and then a European head coach, what's the combination of that, right?
Right.
Or, you know, exactly. or vice versa. It's a really complicated situation right now as to, you know, chicken or the egg.
All I'll say is that this has to have hit pause on our coaching search. Like, you cannot hire a coach before you hire a sporting director or even the technical director that Brian McBride, the general manager, or whatever that he mm-hmm. was in. You just can't. Those two roles have to have oversight and choice, and their options in who that should be leading our national team moving forward.
Didn't you already get offered the role, Jimmy?
Well, I you know, I'm so I can't confirm or deny any rumors at this time, Charlie. But I'm weighing my options, I think, is okay. The best way to say it. It's just like you. I mean, ultimately, I'm waiting to see if you're going to sign a sporting director first before.
I low-key think.
I don't
one
know if I want Charlie's my
applying.
Boss. I don't know. I think
one of the three of us is applying for one of those positions. I don't know who it is. It's a Survivor Island. No one's going to say anything, but I think one of us in here is going to do it. You know,
listen.
Throw a name in the hat.
Charlie's a passive aggressive boss, I think. You know, I've talked to some of the people that work at his houses that are doing that type of stuff, and he's super passive aggressive. No, not making eye contact. Like, hey, man. You missed a spot dusting over there.
It's going to be tough because you got to get Charlie's boat all the way to Chicago. Yeah, but at least there's a lake
hard.
There.
Like, I saw a scratch on my boat. Can you buff that out?
But he will be able to keep the boat in Chicago, which is good for him. Summers will be nice. By the way, when Charlie talked about Ernie picking him up from the airport, I was like, of course, because Charlie flew in on a private plane. Ernie pulls right up to the plane and helps him out. Like, that's a fun pickup.
I don't know if they can afford Charlie, to be honest.
Hey, you come into LAX and I got to keep doing loops to pick you up, Charlie. I'm going to just tell you hop in an Uber, you know, but when you fly, when you fly private, like Charlie is, you pull right onto the tarmac and pick him up, which is that's an easy pickup.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. That Charlie's got a long list, I think, of demands if he was going to take this job. So
I mean,
vote him in.
Do you think though, if it is an American, that they would have had to have won an MLS Cup? Do you think that would be important to get this role? Like, which would signify that they've had success.
Are you suggesting like a John Thorington or?
Yeah. I mean, whether it's
at LAFC.
I mean, if it's someone who put together a team and obviously they've won an MLS Cup. Don't you think that is probably something that needs to happen?
Yeah, I agree. I think, yeah, some level of success, knowing how to put successful organizations together, I think would be super important. So that means Chris Klein is out. Shout out to Kleiner at the Galaxy. Not doing well, my friend. Good luck next season. But I think that has to be some type of prerequisite. A level of success, demonstrating that you know how to make things work despite difficult circumstances, coping with adversity, balancing all these different personalities, getting everybody on the same page, mm-hmm. and showing at the end of all that, that you have a trophy or something to signify, I know what the hell I'm doing. Yes, I think that's important. So Thornton would be an interesting hire. He's young, ambitious, smart, and I'm kind of curious. But like we talked about him before, I don't know if he'd leave the job at LAFC. It seems like he's bought himself a few years to chill out after winning MLS Cup last year. And I think he's got a great relationship.
I don't think Thornton chills. Have you seen his?
He doesn't chill, but I think he mentally, emotionally,
first workout, you know, 2 p.m. second workout, everything in between. It's just like, you know, call screaming, fighting for your team to build it up. But again, they do have some technical aspects. You know, you have your Tony Lepores at U.S. Soccer. There's going to be people that come in that are, is that shout out New Hampshire, Charlie?
It is. New Hampshire. Let's go. New England's all up in here.
But there's going to be – there is a technical aspect that they believe in already at U.S. Soccer that wasn't just implemented by Greg, right, or wasn't just implemented by Ernie Stewart. There is a wider process of people that are in place to be able to help carry this thing forward. Therefore, the next candidate can't just come in and go, I got a whole bunch of ideas. I need to hire the coach. I also need to hire the GM. We're going to play a completely different style. Like, there's going to be some – it's got to be a continuation in some ways. People can call Greg a failure. They can call Ernie a failure on what he's done. People can have whatever opinions they want of that, but it has to be a continuation. It can't be a fresh start where we're going to rebuild U.S. soccer again for the umpteenth time.
Okay, final thoughts then from everybody. I will go first. I'm very curious to see how this is all going to play out. I do think that the timeline has now switched with regard to our coaching selection and who we're going to go with. I do find it interesting that Sportsology, who is run by Mike Ford, has a very close relationship with Carlo Ancelotti, who maybe he's done what he's going to do with Real Madrid and he wants to do something else. I know that he once mentioned that he would manage Canada at a World Cup. Maybe we can convince him to manage the U.S. instead. I would take Ancelotti in a heartbeat. So I'm very curious if that can be massaged in any way. And because if we're going to really wait till the summer, maybe he's available. That's I'm just throwing that out there. I'm trying to will that into existence. But that is my final thought. Charlie, final thoughts for you on this emergency podcast.
I just hope we put a team or a staff together ASAP. I mean, ideally by Nations League, right? So not the one in March, the one in the summer. Mm-hmm. I think that we got to have a coach by then. By that Nations League, I'd like to see a manager.
Yep, there you go. You heard it from the new sporting director, Charlie Davies. Keith, final thoughts.
That's so good. That's well done, Jimmy. Good delivery. Good setup and good delivery. Just pinned him in the corner and waited for it. No, I mean, for me, it's again, what I want to see is a clear and confident plan. I'll buy into anything that U.S. Soccer does because I love U.S. Soccer, but I just want to see that confidence in a plan. I want things to feel connected from now in the coaching search and the GM search. In the sporting director search, I wanted to have sort of the values at the forefront of what we're trying to do and accomplish, leave out all the other controversies and just see a clear plan that allows us to go, okay, I agree or don't agree, but at least I see what they're trying to do. And that's it.
Okay.
And then win a World Cup in 26. But well, besides that, no besides pressure. That, I'm good. You know, besides
maybe
that,
the Copa America in 24 as well. That would be great. Yeah. All right, everybody. That is the end of In Soccer We Trust. So on behalf of producer Dez, producer Alex, Charlie Chuckwagon, Davies, Hollywood Heath Pierce, I'm Jimmy Conradinho Conrad saying thank you for listening and supporting as always. And we will see you Saturday going live right after the game as the U.S. take on Colombia in L.A. or the Galaxy play. This should be a lot of fun. So enjoy those 90 minutes and we'll see you afterwards. Later.
Docuseries on Paramount Plus.
Why did he kill his family? The answer lies across the ocean in a woman named Sylvie.
She's a CAN model.
Where desire leads to deception.
I ended up spending $12,000 and $15,000 a day.
It was addictive.
I can't get you out.
And obsession leads to murder.
Who did this to your family?
You can't really maintain a fantasy forever.
Control all desire. Now streaming on Paramount Plus.